Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 26th, 2002. Today's session is titled Worship Planning 2, Focus on Advent, Christmas, and Epiphany, presented by Tom Witt and the team. The tape number is 2002-21.
In previous living liturgies, we either had no worship planning sessions or one worship planning session. Last weekend we had, when we were in San Diego, had two worship planning sessions, and this week we have three. So it shows you the importance that people have told us and given us feedback that this is an important part of creating and nurturing living liturgy, is planning worship. So we'd be interested at the end, your feedback about this week. We started with looking at the entire church year as we look at worship planning and putting together and caring for and keeping a worship committee throughout the year. This session is on taking a look at one particular season, one that's coming up for us all, the beginning of our church year, Advent. And then later on today, and I don't have my schedule on me. Does anyone know when this is the one that got left out of the schedule, but we announced worship planning week by week. 3:45 in what room? Okay, great. By the way, while I remember, the gathering for the Reformed Church folks has been changed after they caucused, some of them anyway, and at 2 o'clock in this room out here, the Village Center Lounge, those folks will meet with Dan Geslin, Reformed Church folks, 2 o'clock. So we're going to look at Advent as worship planners, and I would like to start by asking both Dan and Susan to talk to us a little bit about the season of Advent. And I don't know if people have the 8.5 by 14 sheet of the church year that was handed out. If you do, you can take a look at that. If not, you won't need to. Yeah. So, Dan?
I don't have to tell you that the season of Advent is probably the place in people's minds where the cultural calendar and the church calendar clash. And we all have experience with this, and it is very difficult. And it is also very recent. I know my father's generation, when he was a child on a farm in South Dakota, the memories he has is on Christmas Eve, all day, everyone was so, the day was so filled with Christmas decorating that they didn't even stop to eat, that grandmother had a big pot of soup on the stove, and you just had some soup when you had a minute. And then you were back to getting ready for Christmas. And then you were ready by Christmas Eve later to open the presents, the correct time to open presents. And then what was, I thought, needed to be changed was then you would get up at for the 5 a.m. Christmas Day Julata, which is Swedish for "Why are we getting up this early?" But just to make the point that Advent was in place in those days, and that was a tradition that would have gone back hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was in place, and it was there because of the value in Christian faith of waiting and anticipation, slowing down, praying as you wait for something to come, and the joy when it finally comes after a period of preparation and prayer and even repentance and the beautiful picture of preparing one's heart for the coming of the Christ child. Now, I want to just share the four responses to the dilemma of the society is so immersed in what I call winter festival. I would rather than saying Christmas starts early in the culture, I would rather say that winter festival really begins around the first or right after Thanksgiving. And then in the church we, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I know. I'm so old. These notes are from 20 years ago. So. No, I'm just kidding. Halloween, okay. At least the shopping, right, starts. And then just first this kind of joyful thing to say is that we talk about the church being an anticipatory community, but all a waiting community, and also an alternative community. And if there ever is a time to teach people about being alternative, it is during Advent, that we don't set our life according to what the culture here tells us to. We announce our freedom. Okay, now I have four responses to the dilemma. Number one is just to cave in and follow the way of the culture. And the church Christmas tree goes up the first week in December, and the Christmas festivals and festivities begin, because then you're in harmony with the culture. And the encouragement of taking number one is this is where you would need an intense argument with the ancestors. The second is a form of compromise. In the church, the Christmas tree goes up maybe the third week of Advent with its decorations. The fourth week of Advent often is the Sunday school Christmas program. Anybody here ever thought of having an Easter program when people's lives aren't all busy and crabby? Well, just an idea. The other thing I have, what if all of the energy that is put into a Sunday school Christmas program was put into children preparing for the Christmas Eve Eucharist, and children would have parts, and they would have the procession to the manger, and a intergenerational choir would be preparing and worship planning all through December for this great feast on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. It's called just redirecting energy. But number two would be that kind of compromise. Then number three is the form of what I call the Advent police. And when I was village pastor here at Holden, that's what I was. I was the Advent policeman. And I would go around the village just sniffing out or something Christmas might be going on during Advent. And then you just gut it out in the midst of all the anger and people throwing things at you and doing it anyway. So that's number three. Number four, I think, is it comes out of teaching and formation, as we call it, into a sense of being a counterculture or a contrast society community, a community that values prayer, quiet prayer, a community that values meditation, a community that values waiting, which is waiting for the future rather than immediate gratification. And here's where we have a chance to be about as alternative, second to the way of the cross, of course, but as alternative as one can be, and that is quiet and waiting and anticipation. Now, this alternative, joyful Advent way would be number one, to lift up the wonder of quiet and peace, solitude, and also prayer and waiting and waiting. This is a time that can be so beautiful that people will say, I can't wait till Advent comes again. I've heard of churches that have Holden evening prayer during Wednesdays of Advent, and to have it a special Holden evening prayer with the lights low, many Advent candles. And in our church, we have a harp that plays with the Advent Vespers. And also the harp plays, O Come, O Come, and then we sing that in place of the, I forgot which part. Isn't there an adjustable part in the Holden evening prayer? Or, yeah. Yeah, that's it. We wouldn't want to break any of the rules. Okay. And also the anticipation of Christmas, as this time, as many of you do, is handicraft or craft projects during Advent, the Advent wreath for the home, and the other ways. But here's an idea about the Christmas tree, because I found some of them, that and singing Christmas carols is where the most pressure comes. Now, I have an answer for the Christmas tree. and that is to put the Christmas tree up about when people do, but instead of decorating it with Christmas decorations, decorate it with anticipatory decorations. You know, the old tradition is that's the Old Testament figures that are waiting for Christ. And then part of the anticipation of Advent is that you know on Christmas Eve that we're going to take those down and then put up the chrismons or the Christmas tree ornaments as that glad announcement that after our prayer, after our waiting, Christmas is now here. And also to remember that Advent does not mean no decorating. It would be a fine time for fir or pine things in the windows with blue ribbons instead of and then change those to the white ribbons for Christmas, or white and gold. One thing I've had a hard time, I'm getting into Christmas now, but I've had a hard time in church art is to teach people that red and green are not the liturgical colors for Christmas. And it is so embedded in people's minds that this is Christmas colors that it is very easy for to get red and green all over the sanctuary when our color is white and gold. But then the other way of making Advent exciting and joyful, especially for children, is that if you have a large Christmas creche, which I would encourage, that all through Advent that sits up in the front empty, waiting, that just as we are waiting for the coming of the Christ child, the creche is waiting for this wondrous evening when Christ will be born. And then and you could have another place where the shepherds are way off somewhere in their fields watching over their flocks by night, and the children can walk by this, even pick up the figures and know that I know what these shepherds don't know, and that is the angel choir is coming, and they're up on a high shelf somewhere waiting for their takeoff. And then way down at the other end of the church building are the Magi, because they are going to come to this Christ child on Epiphany. And even every Sunday when the children come, they can move the wise men a few feet towards the creche. And then the joy and the procession, the Eucharistic procession on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, is that the children are there and the honor of carrying one of the figures up to the Christ child as we are singing, O Come, All Ye Faithful, or one of those. Now, when we were campus pastors at PLU, we had the added problem is we had Advent without Christmas because all the students go home. So we were one of the few Christian congregations in the world that had no Christmas services and no Easter services. But I don't know, one thing we did was on the fourth Sunday of Advent, after the benediction, we would declare Christmas and just stay and sing carols. You know, and in some ways that might work in a congregation, you know, now that we have on the four Sundays of Advent. You know, it takes some, because am I right that pressure is great? Or am I just making this up? That's one way. And then the other way is to plan more in the 12 days of Christmas, because part of the people have somewhat of a legitimate concern is that we don't get to sing all the Christmas carols if they're all packed into one night. But to have festival times during the 12 days, and this is the time when people are not going crazy busy during the 12 days, this would be the time for a holiday party, for the Christian holiday. This would be time to move to Epiphany. And then this isn't like taking Christmas carols away from people. And so those are, but then those are just some suggestions, and you might have more, and we might have a little time to do now, or should we do that later? Now?
Later.
Okay. I'll wait in anticipation for this. Okay. So we'll pick this up later, but just as a reminder, the basic is this, are we willing and do we have the strength and the help of the Spirit to make Advent something that fulfills what I think people really, really need, and that is that here is a space of grace, here is a space of quiet, of prayer and anticipation. So that's, who's next? Martin.
I'm going to sing a psalm with you. It's very simple.
Lord, make us turn to you. Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face, and we shall be saved. Lord, make us turn to you. Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face, and we shall be saved. Shepherd of Israel, hear us. Shine forth from your heavenly throne. Rouse up your power and come to save us. Lord, make us turn to you. Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face, and we shall be saved. We are the vine you planted. From Israel you brought, from Egypt you brought us forth. Nurture the vine which you have planted. Lord, make us turn to you. Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face, and we shall be saved.
I really like Advent. It's my favorite season. And I was thinking when John said at the end of this last session about selective disdain, I thought that was very good. I like that idea that we have a selective disdain for the Eucharist. And I think we have to say the problem with Advent might be not entirely that the culture is forcing us to do this. We're probably not strong enough in our own resolve to make Advent what it is. When I found that I was able to do what Dan says, to sort of make space for quiet and mystery and awe, people were grateful for that, the quiet of it, doing things more simply. It's the perfect situation for you if you're in those parishes where you have minimal resources, because if you have minimal resources, you have to do things simply. So it forces you back into that. And even if you sing only marginally well, if you work hard enough, you can probably get through a psalm like that. Just practice and practice, take the time. I find that the spaciousness made me able to pray in a way that it's hard for me to pray much of the time in prayer. I'm always aware of what the next thing is. I'm always aware of doing where I have to go and what. But if you set up a nice rhythm through the season that stays consistent, using a piece of music through the season, the way that it builds, in doing that, then you can have a sense that you can relax into the prayer and pray yourself. For me, so much of whether I feel that I'm helping in the prayer depends on my ability to be present to it. And I can't be present to it unless I do it simply enough. So I tended to give most of my musicians Advent off. I would use the rehearsal time to really work on Christmas with them, and I could focus that. So that could be where my energy went. And Advent, we did very simply. Did the psalms simply. Most of the music was familiar. When we were in Encinitas, Mary pointed out all the wonderful Advent carols there are. And I think if you do Advent carefully and quietly and well, people will be grateful that they don't have to sing what the rest of the culture is singing. it can be a time in which counterculture can bring something really powerful. And one of the things I remember is how well I understood anticipation as a child. At December, I didn't understand Advent when I was 5 years old, but I understood that December was a month of waiting. I understood it very profoundly. Children understand the joy and that almost painful excitement of anticipation in a way that adults don't. When I was about 10, what I wanted more than anything in the world was a football uniform. And my father, who had this sort of wicked Norwegian passive-aggressive sense of humor, informed me, I can't believe he did this to me, he told me that this year just hadn't gone well enough and he couldn't get me a football uniform. And so I spent the whole month of December, and then Christmas Eve he said, go look in the garage, and there was a football uniform. And I'll never forget the sense of wishing and hoping and waiting. Maybe he was playing a trick on me because he'd done it often enough. And but that sense of waiting, and I think children can be the way to lead this, the way Dan said with the creche. Children can get into that in a very good way. It's also a time, if you're going to change something, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow, about going home from Living Liturgy and thinking, what one thing or what two things can we change? If you're going to change something, Advent is the place to do it. Make one change, one simple but meaningful change, and use the season to mark it. So what I was going to suggest is maybe if you haven't done the Psalms in a very interactive, real way, this might be a way to think about what you could do. So I just wanted to give you a couple Psalms that can be done a cappella, if need be. Both of these have accompaniments. In fact, in terms of anticipation, I was anticipating that GIA would send up a booklet that you could take home that had all these psalms in it. And it still might come. I don't know if it's waiting for the Messiah or waiting for Elijah, you know, where the chair sits there each year, but it may come. It may come today. It may never come, but it may come today. But this is the psalm that's in there. It's from Come Let Us Sing for Joy. I was struck by how to write tunes that the congregation can own. So I would have had you look at the music, but you don't have the music. So we'll see how it goes. It's Psalm 25, which is also a psalm connected with Advent. To you, O God, I lift my soul. O keep me free from shame. To you, O God, I lift my soul. O keep me free from shame. I place my trust in you alone, your promise and your name. I place my trust in you alone, your promise and your name. Try the whole thing. To you, O God. To you, O God, I lift. Keep me free from shame. Oh, keep me free from shame. I place my trust in you alone, your promise and your name. Your ways, O God, make known to me. Your path be my vocation. Lead me in truth and teach me well, my God and my salvation. To you, O God, I lift my soul. O keep me free from shame. I place my trust in you. Let not the ones who wish me harm rejoice to see me stumble. No one is shamed who waits for you. You raise the weak and humble. To you, O God, I lift my soul. O keep me free from shame. I place my trust in you alone, your promise and your name. One suggestion, introduce a new setting, or a setting that hasn't been used for a while, that your congregation knows. Maybe come back to a familiar setting, like the LBW setting, but do it a cappella through the season. Let them sing it, or just a flute leading it, or a recorder up an octave, which will carry really well. And then on Christmas Eve, the same setting with all the instruments you can find. And suddenly you'll find both the congregational singing has improved, but also their anticipation for that moment when the music breaks forth says to them something real. It's the fulfillment of all we've been waiting for.
When Dan talks about living in dead ritual, one of the things he reminds me of is where there is not some continuity between what happens in church and what happens in the home. Young children have a hard time being formed in the faith. So this would be a good time of year to introduce to households ways to keep the seasons of the church. I made a very simple suggestion a couple of days ago that a mother jumped on because her daughter is quite artistic and she could imagine handing this piece of domestic ritual to her 8-year-old daughter and let her grow into it, which is simply placing something beautiful, a symbol, a sign, an evocative object that welcomes us into the season. So it could be the Advent wreath on the table or the log where a candle is lighted one week after the next. And then thinking of what might open up for Christmas, you know, a flower. One of my favorite things to do during Advent with children is to plant in stones narcissus bulbs and watch during the course of Advent those little sprouts start up. So that during the season of Christmas, almost like clockwork, these things have been bred to work this way, you'll have sweet, fragrant, white blooms to have present on your table. So another Advent symbol might simply be bulbs. All of that anticipation, all of that promise, all of that hope sitting there, and then replaced by something flowering in the dead of winter, the Rose of Sharon. That would be one way to start a community during Advent to think seasonally. And all you would need to do is have a little corner in your newsletter as the season comes out. Think about these possibilities in your home. In our home, in order to keep at the center the Feast of the Incarnation, we have expanded our Christmas out. A whole month. When my husband and I became pastors, we were no longer free, like my other siblings were, to congregate in my childhood home with my parents for Christmas, because pastors need to stay put at Christmas. And so we decided that St. Nicholas Day, December 6th, would be our family Christmas, where everyone could gather and be present. And we happened to have a Nicholas in our immediate family too. And researching the gifts of that saint, who legend has it was primarily generous to children, and thinking of ways in our family that we might mark that day with generosity to children, ways that we could share our abundance with others and with the children in our family. Maybe it ruins the anticipation to receive gifts on that day, but I think it heightened their sense of it. They walked through Advent knowing at some deep level a gift had already been given, which isn't a bad image either. And then it was a foretaste of the feast to come. And then we keep Epiphany in our home, and it has become one of the most powerful rituals in our home. Whatever the day of week, we rise on January 6th before dawn in the dark. And during the 12 days of Christmas, each day we add another candle to our table. It's a good way to use all those stubs that you have left over. You can even get into your basement emergency candle stock, you know, your 2KY stock or Y2K or Y2K. I didn't stock for it, so that by through the 12 days of Christmas, the light on the table keeps growing and growing and growing. And then the children get up in the dead of night, it feels like, when it's still dark, and the only light that's present are these 12 candles burning on the breakfast table, and now stars hanging down from the light above the table. In fact, when we were looking for a new home when we moved, my girl said, "We can't buy this home. There's no place to hang the stars over the table." I said, "Well, you know, we'll..." And then on the seats of their chairs is their Epiphany gift. And it's always a book, because that's what wise people bring to children. And you can buy these books on the big post-winter festival sales. But what that has done in our home is to elongate this season and take the children from the beginning of Advent all the way through the 12 days to the great Epiphany. And then at PLU, we would have Epiphany Eucharist, too, because our students would have come back by then, and we wouldn't have had a chance to have Christmas. So we'd gather at our house and make star cookies and decorate them, and then we had a big star on a broomstick with ribbons hanging off it. Remember that? And we make this procession down 120th Street and turn the corner right in the middle of the neighborhood. All kinds of people following this star at night onto campus, cross campus, up the stairs into this little hideaway chapel. And we would have our great Epiphany Eucharist and then eat the stars afterwards, taking in the light so that we might shine to the nations with the light and love of God. I think Christians might reclaim these seasons by finding the non-commercialized holidays. I mean, we don't buy and sell Epiphany yet. And once Hallmark figures this out, I mean, you'll be able to do that. But there, we might have a period of time before marketers start marketing these lesser festivals. And framed that way, then Christmas becomes, you know, the peak in that, and this becomes the continuation. Gut genug? We also in our house do move those little people all around, you know, and so the wise people always are in the easternmost room, and we march these little characters down. And my difficult thing was finding a creche set that wouldn't break and where the baby would come out of the manger. And I found a wonderful wooden one. I liked everything about it except the baby wouldn't come out of the manger. And a friend of mine took a saw and sawed him out, and he's got kind of a little rough bottom now. But then the youngest one at the beginning of Advent takes this child and this infant and hides it. And this is the youngest child's job, is to remember through all of Advent where you have hidden this little Kleenex wrapped wooden child. But I think that is anticipation too, because I remember Maggie, you know, she would check, you know, he's still there. And this anticipation of being the one who would have to find a way to sneak that little figure into the manger on Christmas.
This is another song that might come up the lake today or tomorrow. But once again, it's a song like much of the stuff that I do in Advent. I do the regular hymns like "O Come, O Come, Emmanuel" and "Wake, Awake," but also music that can allow people to sort of be present to the moment. I used this song all the way through Advent a couple years ago at our parish. We lit the Advent wreath, and then they used this to process in, and then we used it again. It was one of the first times the UCC Church at our one had decided they were going to have communion on Christmas, and so we used it as the communion hymn and then sang Silent Night at the end. So there's two refrains. The first one is, "Come to us, O Emmanuel, come to us, O Emmanuel, come to us, O Emmanuel, come to us, O Emmanuel, come, O root of Jesse, to lineage, come to us, O Emmanuel."
Christmas, the refrain becomes, the gift of God, O Emmanuel,
gift of God, O Emmanuel,
with the shepherds and the magi,
gift of God, O Emmanuel,
with the angel's song we praise you,
gift of God, O Emmanuel,
we lift up our hearts in joy. Song. This is not a hymn of the day. It doesn't work if you're standing still. This is music to move to, whereas hymn of the days are definitely music to stand and not move to. This is something Roman Catholics haven't quite learned yet. They try and move and sing a hymn. Lutherans, on the other hand, haven't learned that there's other kinds of forms that can work to move with. Let the stars of nighttime praise you. Let the holy darkness praise you. Let creation join in song.
Gift of God.
And at the end of communion, we went into silent night from there. Tied the season together, the same piece of music for the Advent wreath and then for communion at Christmas.
As we approach this new year and a new lectionary cycle, we thought it might be helpful to take a moment and just hear the lessons of Advent. And we don't have time to hear all of the lessons, but the four gospel readings from this next year's Advent season. We invite you now into a time, and you can close your eyes. If you find it helpful to take notes, you can, but maybe it's better just to let this sink in, to hear these words, and then we'll chant a chant you need no paper for, so just listen and sing back what's sung to you. And then afterwards, we'll talk a little bit about what images come to you and how that might affect your worship planning as you approach Advent this coming year. So listen for the word of the Lord.
The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 13th chapter. Jesus said, "In those days after that suffering, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from the heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Then the Son of Man will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about the day or hour no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like someone going on a journey who, leaving home and putting the slaves in charge of their own. Dawn, or else coming suddenly, the Lord may find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. The Gospel of the Lord.
Please sing back what you hear.
Who will open our eyes? Who will open our eyes? Who else will open our eyes?
Who else will open our eyes?
Jesus.
Jesus.
We are waiting.
We are waiting.
We are waiting for you.
We are waiting for you.
You said you'd be coming. Don't let us hope for nothing.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the first chapter. The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As it is written in the prophet Isaiah, see, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way. The voice of one crying out in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight the paths of the Lord. John the Baptizer appeared in the wilderness proclaiming a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. And people from the whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem were going out to him and were baptized by him in the River Jordan, confessing their sins. Now John was clothed with camel's hair, with a leather belt around his waist, and he ate locusts and wild honey. He proclaimed, after me, one who is more powerful than I is coming, the thong of whose sandals I am not worthy to stoop down and untie. I have baptized you with water, but the one who is coming will baptize you with the Holy Spirit. The Gospel of the Lord.
Who will be our guide? For you.
We are waiting for you.
You said you'd be coming.
You said you'd be coming.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
The Holy Gospel according to John, the first chapter. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Judeans sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" John confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" And John said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me, the thong of whose sandal I am not worthy to untie." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. The Gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Who will be our light?
Who will be our light?
Who else will be our light?
Who else will be our light?
Jesus.
We are
waiting. We are waiting for you.
We are waiting for you.
You said you'd be coming.
You said you'd be coming.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the first chapter. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth, to a virgin woman engaged to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And the angel came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by the angel's words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his dominion there will be no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" The angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy and will be called Son of God. And now, your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son. And this is the sixth month for her, who was said to be barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." Then the angel departed from her. The Gospel of the Lord.
waiting for you.
We are waiting for you.
You said you'd be coming.
You said you'd be coming.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
Don't let us hope for nothing.
We are waiting.
We are waiting.
We are waiting for you.
We are.
When we go to lunch today, maybe you know, this is the village's Hunger Awareness Day. It happens each year, each week, week after week. But think of this meal as an advent, as a waiting, as eating and yet the hunger remains, as a simplifying, as a calling into our presence, the hungry of the world. And then tonight, we will gather around the real feast at this table. And Christ will be present. So blessed Advent feasting be yours.